Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 436, Triumph of the Shill, part three, The Kaiser of California. This is being recorded on December 1st of the year 2003. Before we get into the main subject material of this talk, remember that sister station WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. Older programs are available for download only at a longer URL that's linked both to the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website and also to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Spitfire is a CD duplication service that stocks the various tapes and lectures I've done, various shows and lectures I've done over approximately a quarter of a century or so. And you can visit their website at spitfirelist.com. The most recently recorded pair of half-hour segments are available for download only on Real Audio on the Spitfire website. And please note that there are long, written, annotated descriptions of each For the Record program that are in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website within a week or so of the airing of this program. So if there are listeners who find this, once again, admittedly very pedantic form of broadcasting to be sort of difficult to assimilate, I can appreciate that, and for that reason, with the advent of the remarkable technology that is the Internet, I've been writing this stuff down and putting text excerpts in the program, so if listening to it didn't seem to be quite enough for you, you have a number of options. You can go back if you're on the Internet and listen to it again and again and again on the WFMU websites, or you can go and read about it in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. That's in the For the Record section at spitfirelist.com. Now, this broadcast is going to be a third program dealing with the incipient, well, now it's not incipient, but the budding, I guess one could say, governorship of Arnold Schwarzenegger. This was the fifth program that I've done about Schwarzenegger. I did two while he was campaigning. For the Record 421, titled Pump This, the Schwarzenegger File. For the Record program number 422, called True Lies, More About Conan the Republican. And then 429 and 434, Triumph of the Shill, Parts 1 and 2. And now, 436, Triumph of the Shill, Part 3, The Kaiser of California. Now, the title of these broadcasts, the most recent of the programs about Schwarzenegger, are obviously a play on the triumph of the will. That is a famous, quote, documentary, unquote, that Nazi filmmaker Leni Riefenstahl made about the Nazi Party Congress. And that carefully staged Congress, which, as we'll read in a few minutes, was staged very deliberately with Leni Riefenstahl's cinematography very precisely in mind. That German Nazi Party Congress evolved into a very famous pseudo-documentary. It was really a propaganda film called The Triumph of the Will. I have borrowed on that slightly and punned on that slightly for The Triumph of the Shill. That is a very self-conscious and very deliberate adaptation of the pun on the title of Leni Riefenstahl's documentary. I've noted in the marketing of Arnold Schwarzenegger, himself the son of not only a Nazi Party member, but a brown shirt member, and a fellow, his father, who was a member of Feldgendarmerie Unit 521 that liaised with Einsatzgruppe A, the SS murder gangs that, when attached to Panzergruppe 4, killed over 2 million Jews alone in the year that Schwarzenegger was with Feldgendarmerie 521. That's for Schwarzenegger Sr., of course. Einsatzgruppe, again, were the mobile Nazi killing squads that were attached to the various Wehrmacht units. The Feldgendarmerie, or the Chain Dogs, as they were known, were the notorious German military police, the equivalent of RMPs. One of their key functions was as the liaison nexus with the Einsatzgruppen. Schwarzenegger himself has frequently, or did frequently, express his admiration for Hitler and his racist views and his altogether authoritarian views on social relations. In the 1990s, in particular after the publication of the Wendy Lee unauthorized biography titled Arnold, an unauthorized biography, Schwarzenegger, in what I believe is a very deliberate attempt at covering his political tracks, has become a multi-million dollar supporter of Holocaust remembrance. I believe quite simply that is to cover his tracks and to obscure his, not only his father's Nazi background, but his own nefarious dealings, in particular his unqualified and unretracted support for Nazi war criminal Kurt Waldheim, on whose behalf he campaigned when Waldheim was running for Austrian president in 1986. The marketing of Arnold Schwarzenegger has been very much like the marketing of Adolf Hitler, who was presented as a commoner, an everyman, the everyman who rose from obscurity to the pinnacles of power through his own Nietzschean strength of will. I noted in particular the picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger from page 84 of Sports Illustrated's issue of December 7th of 1987. That's a picture of Schwarzenegger wearing only a tank suit and mineral oil, and he's posed on top of a mountain giving the Nazi salute. And the Gestalt, as the Germans call it, the psychological and conceptual underpinnings of that particular photograph are really very much like Leni Riefenstahl's Triumph of the Will, and also to a lesser extent her glorification of the 1936 Berlin Olympics called Olympiad. The use of propaganda and the extent to which Arnold Schwarzenegger is anything but a man of the people, the populist everyman that he is made out to be, I think is worth going into at some length. We're going to be talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger's actions as governor, the extent to which he is proving to be a Führer rather than a man of the people. We're going to talk about, in particular, the propagandistic aspects of Schwarzenegger's budding gubernatorial regime, and I think that's an appropriate term. And we're going to focus in particular on how Leni Riefenstahl's work was used to market Hitler. And we're going to begin, before we actually get into Leni Riefenstahl's political cinematography and the similarities with the way Arnold Schwarzenegger is using the opinion-forming media, as the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk puts it. We're going to begin with well, what is admittedly a speculative element of discussion. However, it's something that I suspect, I feel very strongly, is probably at the root of the gestalt of Arnold Schwarzenegger's political persona. People who hear this in other parts of the country should not dismiss this as a superficial California phenomenon. Schwarzenegger is being groomed in certain respects anyway, and the groundwork is afoot to possibly enable him or a successor to become president of the United States. What we're going to begin tonight's broadcast, or today's broadcast, with is a discussion of Louis Trenker. He was a German filmmaker, an associate, and at one point lover of Leni Riefenstahl's. Louis is L-U-I-S, and Trenker is T-R-E-N-K as in kangaroo, or Kaiser, E-R. Now, Trenker was a World War I veteran, an Austro-Italian citizen. He was also a skilled mountaineer and was a very gifted athlete and had served as a mountain guide. He became not only an actor, but also a director in a genre of German films called the mountain film, which is described as being to Germany what the Western is to America. The mountain films not only were action-adventure movies in which Louis Trenker not only directed, but in which he also starred. These films frequently had a very nationalistic German theme, and in particular one film called Der Rebel, or The Rebel, from 1932, directed by Louis Trenker and in starring Louis Trenker as the title role. It's about German guerrilla resistance in Bavaria against Napoleon's armies, and the hero is presented as sort of an archetypal German Superman and superhero. Trenker, basically, in addition to being a prime directorial exponent of the mountain film genre, was in that particular type of film, which was idealized by the Nazis and adopted by the Nazi propaganda psyche, as exemplified by Joseph Goebbels. The mountain film, Louis Trenker was a prime directorial exponent, and in which Louis Trenker starred as an action hero. The mountain film, I suspect, and in particular one of Trenker's films called The Kaiser of California, about John Sutter, of Sutter's Mill fame, actually a Swiss citizen, but a man who grew up in Germany, left his family, moved to California, and became a very famous and influential figure in 19th century California history. And we're going to talk about The Kaiser of California, a 1936 film by Louis Trenker. I suspect that the mountain film, Louis Trenker as the archetypal action hero of the German mountain film genre, and possibly The Kaiser of California itself, specifically, were the template upon which Arnold Schwarzenegger's propaganda persona have been crafted to a large extent. Note again that there are aspects of propaganda and political marketing that are common to all political figures. The advent of the mass media have made this that much more significant. Bear in mind also the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk that I've excerpted so many times, and the discussion of the opinion-forming media as the vehicle through which the underground Reich would eventually gain control, first of the United States, and then the world. We'll talk about that, time permitting, later on in the program. I've done a long series of broadcasts about German corporate control of the American media, and also a number about Serpent's Walk itself, and those broadcasts go into the specifics of Serpent's Walk, ostensibly a novel, but I believe a manifesto. We're going to talk now about Louis Trenker, an individual whose work, I suspect, and perhaps one of his films quite specifically, was the template upon which the Schwarzenegger propaganda persona, I believe, was crafted by the Underground Reich. There is a biography of Louis Trenker at the website www.hollywood.com. The full URL will be in the description for this program. I've also put it in as an addendum to the description for FTR 434. The biography of Louis Trenker reads as follows. An important and talented director, actor, and screenwriter, Louis Trenker is a sadly neglected figure in film history. An Austro-Italian, Trenker began in German mountain films in the 1920s and was a popular lead by the end of the decade. He directed some splendid films in the 1930s, but the general neglect or misunderstanding of the films he made during the pre-Nazi and Nazi eras consigned his career to obscurity. And yet, to quote film historian William K. Everson, quote, "The mountain film was to Germany what the Western was to America, and Trenker, as its leading practitioner, was in a sense Germany's John Wayne and John Ford rolled into one," unquote. Trenker served in World War I as a pilot flying missions over the Dolomites and later commanded a troop of mountain guides. He got his start in film when Dr. Arnold Funk, F-A-N-C-K, a geologist turned documentary filmmaker, hired him in 1921 as a tour guide through the mountains. A gifted athlete, Trenker proved a natural for the mountain film's richly melodramatic tales of dangerous rock climbs and last-second rescues set amid the harsh elements of Germany's lone frontiers. Soon, the handsome, strapping Trenker was playing roles in Franck's films and studying filmmaking from Funk and cinematographer Sepp Allgeier. Funk teamed him with dancer-turned-actor and budding director Leni Riefenstahl for mountain films including Der Heilige Berg, or Peaks of Destiny, of 1926, and Der Große Sprung, or The Big Jump, of 1927. skipping down again. Of Trenker and what is considered his best film, The Rebel, he followed up with one of his finest achievements, Der Rebel or The Rebel of 1932, for which he shot English and German language versions himself on location in Bavaria. An historical tale based on fact of mountain peasants defending themselves against Napoleon using guerrilla tactics, The Rebel was powerful, beautifully shot cinema. As with many mountain films, it was nationalistic. The story celebrated German history and traditions, and Trenker at one point leading his pursuers on a thrillingly edited chase that could never have taken place in uninterrupted time, was an idealized, proudly German superhero type. It is thus not surprising that Trenker's films, and indeed many mountain films, would be not only popular with the German people, but also appropriated by the rising Nazi Party. Skipping down again. The Rebel was highly praised by no less a person than Joseph Goebbels, but when the Nazi leader tried to enlist Trenker to make films for the party, the director refused. By the way, Trenker's ideological loggerheads with the Nazis continued. Nonetheless, his films remained an important cultural and propaganda aspect of the Nazi propaganda psyche. Skipping down and continuing. Trenker's alienation may have contributed to his next and most personal film, A Prodigal Son Tale, that stands as one of his greatest achievements as both filmmaker and actor, Der Verlorene Sohn, or The Lost Son, of 1934. Beginning in the Tyrol, the film takes its peripatetic hero to New York for a lengthy middle sequence before returning him home. Trenker's status as an outsider, combined with remarkable documentary footage shot when Hollywood was making films almost entirely within studios, resulted in one of the most striking films ever made about the Great Depression in the United States. The ethnographic thrust of the film continued upon its return to the Tyrol, documenting a mountain festival. The result is a true folk epic, a tale of two cultures, but again, Trenker did not please the Nazis. With this film and his follow-up work, Der Kaiser von Kalifornien, The Kaiser of California of 1936, a sometimes conservative and romanticized but excitingly rendered biopic of the scheming yet pioneering entrepreneur John Sutter, Trenker found himself criticized for showing respectively a depressed America and a very flawed protagonist at a time when Germany wanted the USA either as an ally or neutral in the upcoming war. I would add that view of the U.S. changed when the war actually broke out, and Nazi propaganda in the World War II and in the post-World War II period has portrayed America as the corrupt Jewish-dominated society that needed the Aryan superhero and Führer to straighten it out. Although, again, Louis Trenker was at ideological loggerheads with the Nazis about certain things. Nonetheless, his films, the mountain films in which he both directed and starred, became an important element of the Nazi propaganda psyche. And in particular, I get a strange feeling reading about his film, The Kaiser of California. In particular, the marketing of Arnold Schwarzenegger, and please go to the Spitfire website, go to the For the Record section at spitfirelist.com. There are links to a number of programs to the picture from Sports Illustrated of December 7th, 1987, on page 84 of that issue. There's a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger as the athlete-turned-action superhero posed against the mountains. And again, just consider the concept of the mountain film. Louis Trenker as its primary exponent. Louis Trenker as the archetypal action superhero of his time, which he was. And the adaptation of bodybuilder-turned-cinema action hero superstar Arnold Schwarzenegger, now marketed as the everyman success story, the man who rose from obscurity to be to the pinnacles of power through Nietzschean strength of will. In particular, consider the use of the mass media, first by the Nazis and Trenker's lover and contemporary, Leni Riefenstahl, rather. And we're going to take a look at the marketing of Schwarzenegger and how he is governing. an article that was circulated on the ZNet, that is a web access maintained by Z Magazine. This is an article about Leni Riefenstahl called "The Nazi Who Refused to Die." It's by Sudhanva Deshpande. It reads in part as follows. When one thinks of the propaganda machinery of the Third Reich, one thinks automatically of the stunning spectacle of thousands marching in perfect unison at Nuremberg under the giant swastikas, and the image of the Führer rising majestically over the crowds of delirious followers. This image achieved its most perfect expression in the films Triumph des Willens, or Triumph of the Will, and Olympia on the 1936 Olympics by Leni Riefenstahl. In 1933, Eugen Hadanovsky wrote, "All the power one has, even more than one has, must be demonstrated. 100 speeches, 500 newspaper articles, radio talks, films, and plays are unable to produce the same effect as a procession of gigantic masses of people taking place with discipline and active participation." Hadamovsky, unsurprisingly, went on to become the National Broadcasting Director of the Third Reich. The power of the regime was in the demonstration of it, and people like Leni Riefenstahl demonstrated it better than anyone. Triumph of the Will is ostensibly a documentary, but as is by now well known, it freely changes the sequence of events, juxtaposes discrete shots as if they happen simultaneously and in the same locale, and, most importantly, many of the sequences are not spontaneous but carefully orchestrated and rehearsed. Indeed, Leni Riefenstahl herself wrote how, quote, "The preparations for the party convention were made in connection with the preparations for the camera work," unquote. The apparatus of filming that Riefenstahl conducted was, in that pre-computer and mobile phone era, awesome. She used 30 cameras, 16 principal cameramen with an assistant each, 4 complete sound recording trucks, 120 assistants, and several hundred thousand feet of raw stock. All this was used to craft a film that starred one superstar and 500,000 extras. I would say, interrupting briefly, in California we have one superstar and approximately 33 million plus extras, including me and thee. Continuing. The superstar himself, every bit a demagogue, thrived on the adulation of gigantic crowds. Riefenstahl filmed him alone, in solitary splendor, often from below, so that he loomed over the frame with the sky and the clouds forming a grand backdrop. The crowds, on the other hand, were usually filmed in multitudes, and even when individual faces were shot, the impression created was that of mass frenzy or mass discipline. The collective will was expressed through the iron will of one man. The destiny of a people and a nation was actualized through the triumph of his will. Every participant in these spectacles was expected to turn, as Goebbels himself famously put it, from a little worm into part of a large dragon, unquote. In that moment of sheer performance, when all those involved are ensconced in the circle of magic, everything else is forgotten. And skipping down, Leni Riefenstahl pioneered the technique of filming charismatic leaders, frenzied crowds, symbols and icons of empire, marching soldiers, and powerful athletes. Each and every one of her techniques, made more seductive still by modern technology, enters our drawing rooms on a daily basis today. We only have to open our eyes to the incessant spell that the advertisers of global brands and propagandists of modern empires cast on us to see that the legacy of Leni Riefenstahl is far from dead, even though she finally is. And again, I would suggest that not only Leni Riefenstahl's work, but that of her lover, co-star, and contemporary, Louis Trenker, the primary exponent of the Mountain film and the producer of The Kaiser of California, may very well have been the specific propaganda and psychological and cognitive template upon which the Schwarzenegger propaganda psyche was founded. Bearing in mind the careful staging of the Nazi Party Congress that was portrayed in Triumph of the Will, We're going to take a look now at the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, October 30th of 2003. State's Charm Spreads to U.S. Capital by Mark Sandolo and Zachary Coyle. This is about the very, very carefully choreographed and staged visit of Arnold Schwarzenegger to Washington, D.C., which coincided with the giant wildfires here in California. In For the Record 434, I did some lengthy discussion about those fires and the possibility that they may have been more than the capricious events that they were portrayed as being. California has wildfires. These, however, were anticipated. Many of the fires themselves were arson, and there are a number of political benefits that have accrued to Arnold Schwarzenegger. And again, I've asked the question, and it is a question, not a statement, could that have been, in effect, a Reichstag wildfire? Again, a question I'm asking, not a statement I'm making. But note the careful choreography of Schwarzenegger's visit to D.C., and compare this with what was just read about Leni Riefenstahl in The Triumph of the Will. It clearly was more than interest in California that drew at least 100 journalists and 28 cameras to chronicle a media availability, unquote, that consisted of just six questions. And it was more than respect for the governor's office that lured a near-record crowd of House Republicans, some with their own cameras, to their weekly caucus meeting where the governor was introduced to a standing ovation. Much of the visit was tightly scripted. Walks down hallways were arranged by congressional staff to create pictures showing Schwarzenegger conversing with lawmakers. Staged conversations between Schwarzenegger and members of Congress were held before throngs of journalists and replayed on television throughout the day. Schwarzenegger was held back for 5 minutes outside one GOP lawmaker's meeting so that regular business could be finished in time for his grand entrance. Schwarzenegger appeared perfectly at ease playing the part and sought to turn his star power into more resources for the state, reminding lawmakers who control the federal purse that he had campaigned as the collectinator who would bring back to his state a larger share of federal money. And we're going to take a look at the difference between Arnold Schwarzenegger, the populist everyman, the man who would govern as an independent, who would not be beholden unto special interests, who would not make budgetary cuts into vital programs such as education, help for the poor, people with health problems of one type or another. In fact, he is behaving in the precise opposite fashion of what he said he would. Bear in mind the article that I read in For the Record 434. No sooner had Schwarzenegger become governor than, than he indicated that he would settle for pennies on the dollar the various federal energy lawsuits that had been filed by Cruz Bustamante and that could have brought $9 billion back to the state of California. Recall that in the spring of 2001, Arnold Schwarzenegger met with Enron CEO Ken Lay to discuss ways of becoming governor and derailing the lawsuits against, among other companies, Enron. We're going to close the first side of the broadcast with an excerpt from a book I read frequently, or that I excerpt frequently. The book is called They Thought They Were Free, The Germans 1933 to 1945, edited by Milton Mayer, published in softcover by the University of Chicago Press. This is a German university professor's description of what happened subjectively during the rise of Hitler. What happened here was the gradual habituation of the people little by little to being governed by surprise, to receiving decisions deliberated in secret, to believing that the situation was so complicated that the government had to act on information which the people could not understand, or so dangerous that even if the people could understand it, it could not be released because of national security. And their sense of identification with Hitler, their trust in him, made it easier to widen this gap and reassure those who would otherwise have worried about it. And we're going to continue with the Kaiser of California in Side 2. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record 436, being recorded on December 1st of 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.